My name is Ray Park. You may know me as playing Darth Maul in the Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, and also Solo at Star Wars Story. You're listening to Star Wars Stuff Podcast, The Force is Strong with You All. And remember, Sith Walk.
Hey, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, letting you all know you are listening to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. Wishing everybody all the best, and may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. My name is David.
And I'm Richard Ray, guys.
And I'm Colin.
And this is where we talk all things Star Wars. So, Ray, Colin, feels like it's been a minute for Colin, especially. We haven't done a podcast in a while. What have you been up to?
I've spent I pretty much spent the last 3 months of my life building this. It's been a journey. It's been a lot of work, and I can't believe that, you know, it's finally done. I actually just got approved in the Purple Legion with it. Took me about 97 hours of latch hooking, and then my friend Craig Hobbs actually built the feet for it. We're still adding stuff to it before C2E2, like, so it's more sturdy, But yeah, man, it's been a blast. And then the mask was made by Nathan Ritchie, who sells and makes probably the most screen accurate mask on the market.
Nice, congratulations, man.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been so much fun.
Yeah. It looks
so awesome. If someone wants to do this, what does this set you back for? If someone wanted to hypothetically make one of these.
Okay, so for the hair, so something that I will tell people is that I had no experience doing any of this. I had no experience latch hooking or anything like that. So the whole thing for the shirt and the pants, I latch hooked in 97 hours.
Damn.
Knowing what I know now, I can probably do it in 60. And I'm already hearing from people that I did it in a very quick time. I did latch hooking in a very, very quick time, which is kind of, I don't know the standard. I don't know anything. I just know that I did like 10 hour nights sometimes of me just latch hooking over and over again. And it's a very repetitive experience because you have to latch hook the hair through the mesh, and then you have to keep doing it again and again and again. Some people do like every other hole, which for the arms I did, and sorry if this is boring people, but it's a very interesting technique and way to make this costume. But this is actually how they made the original costume, through latch hooking. I actually went and got Chewie a haircut at a barbershop, and the person cutting my hair, her name's Carol, she actually has been cutting my hair since I was 2 years old, so that was a really, really funny experience. But the reason why that Chewie was getting a haircut was because of the arms. I was latch hooking it where it was 20 inches of hair. So, as you can see, that's a lot of hair, and it should be around 13 inches. So I did the shirt and the pants very differently. And the pants I had no problem with. Like, it was quick. It was super easy, especially knowing what I knew and what not to do from the shirt. And that was just... And just time went by so much quicker after that. But knowing all the stuff I know now, I could definitely do it quicker. I could do it better. But I am still satisfied with how it turned out. And the fact that it got approved so quickly, too, was very shocking. Because I submitted it on, on Tuesday. On Wednesday, and then I got approved on Saturday night. So it was like approved in 4 days, and it was just insane. And I'm so happy. And I will be debuting this at C2E2.
In Chicago, right?
Yes. And my good friend Hunter will be there dressed up as Han Solo for some of the weekend as well. So if you see Han and Chewie walking around, come and say hi. We are very excited. But going back to the question that Ray was asking, so for expenses for this, the masks, it depends on who you go to. I highly suggest going to Nate Ritchie, who made my mask. His masks are around $2,000, but he also does black chrysanthemum as well. And again, these are like screen accurate masks, so they're fantastic. And then for the shirt and pants, the hair, man, if I didn't go overboard with overdoing the hair, you could probably spend less than $300 on the hair alone, just buying the actual material. And then for the feet, we did the feet in a very interesting way. Some people do stilts. Some people do buckets. We bought EVA foam, like wall foam that is normally installed under the walls. And then I'm explaining this terribly, and if Craig's watching, he's going to call me on it, which is totally fine. But we also had the toes resin printed, and we then had other foam. And as you can see, we are putting them right in front of the snowboarder boots, which I got mine for $110. I'm a size 13. It might be easier to find someone with smaller feet, but the height requirement is 7 feet for Chewie. So you have to find a way to get it to that height. If you are 7 feet, then I guess you don't need stilts, which is, you know, fantastic. Awesome for you. But for me, I'm 6 foot. I'm 6 foot one. So we added about 8 to 9 inches on the foam, and I'm still learning how to walk in them. I'm hoping to get some practice in and tomorrow with them, but it's it's been fun. I'm still working on stuff as we speak, right before C2E2. I'm still adding the final touches on my crossbow, but overall, probably spend just under $4,000 on it, which is not bad, because I think my like max I was going to spend on it was $5,000, and that's actually what some people sell it for. Some people sell them for $5,000, some people sell them for $6,000. But I did it under that, and I think the most expensive you're spending money on is probably the mask. But yeah.
So is the mask like one size fits all, or do they actually have to send measurements in so they can make it to your head?
As far as I know, his are one size fits all. And then I put foam in certain spots. So then that way you can actually move the jaw and people can see your eyes and stuff. So you can actually move the jaw, which is fantastic. It's so cool. And to me, if the mask doesn't look right, then the rest of the costume is... I feel like if the mask was not as amazing as it is, it would kill that illusion of, wow, it's Chewie. And his... I cannot stress of how great his masks are, because they are just top-notch. They're fantastic. Yeah, so hands down, fun costume to do. I can't wait to debut it. And then I actually have a speaker that I have in my chest that I'm putting on my chest. And then I got a sound glove from Hyperspace Props, and it's a button system to where every time that I press a button, like the sound of Chewie like comes out, and then I match. I do the movements, and I do like I actually move my mouth as the sound is coming out. So like it adds the illusion to everything. So it's so.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Cool, it's so much fun. But yeah,
I think I have a little movie clip of you in action here, Colin.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's okay to show it.
I don't know which one you're going to show.
the one you sent me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sure, go.
All right, here we go. So for everyone listening on audio, I'm about to show a clip of Colin in his newly created Chewbacca cosplay.
Oh yeah, this one. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. Just seeing that. Oh man. Even taking pictures in the park that day for my approval photos, we could barely do anything because people just kept coming up to us. So I was just like, okay, C2E2 is gonna be very interesting. But I'm so excited, and I love Star Wars so much. So the fact that I get to keep doing this in new and fun and creative ways, you know, if it's through the podcast or doing stuff with costumes, is just a dream come true. So I'm just happy, you know, that I'm doing this. But yeah, super yeah, super awesome. Exciting.
Yeah, congratulations once again on getting approved from the Rebel Legion as well. So yeah, before we go any further, we do want to recognize our awesome supporters out there on Patreon. Our top tier supporters are Hayden Hauser, Darth Ace One, Liam McCallion, Chris Simpson, Kevin Leininger, Devin McCaffrey, Drew Peters, Zach Netzel, Fenrir 526, Maya Morris, and Maka Talatala. Thank you all for your awesome support. And we got a few topics we want to talk about. As you can see in the title there, Ahmed Best Celebration merch was kind of revealed today. We just talked a little bit about Colin's Chewie cosplay. Maybe talk a little bit more later about it. But yeah, first of all, I do want to talk about Ahmed Best. So he has been in the news recently, locally for me and Ray. He's actually going to make an appearance at SpaceCon, which Colin and Zach are going to fly down from Michigan to South Texas to attend with us. And hopefully Colin does bring his Chewie cosplay. So if you do come to SpaceCon in October in San Antonio, you can check it out there. But yeah, Ahmed Best is going to be making an appearance at SpaceCon in October. But before he does that, he's going to make a couple more appearances possibly. One is going to be in Pasadena on May 4th, which Hunter, who's on our commentary team, is going to be there in attendance with his Jar Jar Binks cosplay.
Yeah,
so hopefully you get some pictures of that.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I love that Ahmed Best is doing more cons, because he hasn't really done them in a very, very long time. So the fact that he's doing more is super, super exciting.
But yeah, it feels like he's ramping up, like he's doing more conventions. He's doing this. I believe he was at another convention, maybe on the East Coast, and we were all kind of like hoping that he was going to be at Celebration London, but maybe this will be kind of like a gateway to maybe go to Japan, maybe do the 50th anniversary. But what were you going to say, Ray?
What do you think his autos are going to cost?
I have no idea.
Do you think it's going to be like 200, like pretty much everyone else, or kind of lower mid-range?
I have no clue. I have no idea. I didn't see what his autographs were going to cost when he did his first convention. But, I mean, we've talked about him coming back to Star Wars. He was the host of that game show that was on YouTube for Star Wars. And that's where he introduced his character, Kelleran Beck. That's where he first met him.
I'm so happy about that.
Yeah, we saw him in Mandalorian Season 3. He was the Jedi that rescued Baby Yoda from the Jedi Temple, which I think we all in unison just cheered and were so happy about that. And I've been saying ever since we've been doing this podcast that he needs to be involved more. And like we said before, we think Lucasfilm does listen to podcasts because that's something I think they caught wind of. And yes, fans want to see him. And of course, with all of his convention appearances, now that it feels like it's snowballing, we're going to see him a lot more. And I want to say he is going to be in Japan. I think it's just a matter of time before they make all those announcements and we get to see him. And of course, it's the 25th anniversary of the Phantom Menace. That's going to be an event where we're all going to get to go back to the theater and watch the Phantom Menace. It's been 25 years, guys. And 25 years ago, I was pretty much the same way I was in 2015 when The Force Awakens was about to drop. That whole year was cooked for me. It was all Star Wars. That's all I was thinking about. And all the way back, yeah, 1999, man.
I was 3 years old.
Yeah. Colin was still in diapers at three.
Drinking that blue milk.
So what was your first experience with the Phantom Menace, Colin?
Seeing it in the theater with my aunt. I don't remember it, but.
Okay. Okay. You kind of had the same experience I had when I was in the theater during, I think, The Empire Strikes Back, and I have no memory of it, but.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I remember, I think the first Star Wars movie that I actually really, really remember would probably be Revenge of the Sith. That was a big deal. I remember because it followed, it happened to come out on my birthday, which was just fantastic. And we went to we stopped at Burger King and we tried to get all of the, like, I think there were bobbleheads or something like that. But then we went to the theater and I remember just sitting in there, just kind of tearing up. And I think my brother was just, oh my gosh, wow, like action and cool. And my dad didn't really know what was going on, but I was sitting there. I was just like, the Jedi are dying and we, no. So yeah, that was that movie will always have a special place in my heart. And I think the main thing that I really loved about The Phantom Menace was probably all of the behind the scenes stuff of how the movie was made.
One of the greatest documentaries.
Oh my gosh. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I actually watched a bunch of behind the scenes stuff while I was latch hooking. I rewatched the documentary. I rewatched all of the Blu-ray behind the scenes stuff of when the complete saga came out, and 7 and 8 and 9 weren't even there yet. Like, they didn't exist. So it was just like the complete saga, and they put it on there. And then they had like never before behind the scenes that they showed and deleted scenes we never seen before. And it was just like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. So, I love the prequels a lot, and the fact that they're getting so much love today is just amazing. And the fact that we get to see The Phantom Menace back in theaters is great. I think the last time that The Phantom Menace was really back in theaters was when they did like the Star Wars like 3D, and The Phantom Menace was like the first of it, and then they were going to re-release all the other films, but then Disney did the deal with Lucasfilm, and then that's what stopped it. So
yeah, I think there's actually some behind-the-scenes plans on maybe making Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith in 3D to kind of have the set of prequels, but I'm not sure if that's still going to be down the line or what exactly what they're going to do with that. But I don't know what the plans are. But yeah, Ray, I don't think we've talked about this with you. Where were you in 1999 when The Phantom Menace dropped? Where did you see it at?
I remember I watched it. I mean, it was pretty much sold out every night from when it aired to the following week almost. But I actually got to see it when it first came out, and it was at a Regal Cinema. If you're from San Antonio, Texas, it's out like towards Shirts area. Theater's kind of old now, but I remember seeing it there. And so when I first saw it, the one thing that really popped for me was seeing Yoda, you know, at the end. But I mean, it's just everything about it. It was just the epic scene in general, just the way it opened up, the music playing. Mm-hmm. I remember everything, and it was just so much to take in. Like, we hadn't had something that in forever. So theater was packed. I mean, you know how normally some people don't like sitting in the front row. I mean, there was actually people sitting in the front row looking up, like,
yeah.
But yeah, I remember exactly where it was. But now I'm looking forward to seeing it now, because of course now screens have gotten a lot more bigger, better sound. So it's going to be very interesting to see it now again.
Yeah, that was the thing that really caught me off guard. I live in a small city in South Texas, and I saw people at that theater that I would have never dreamt to see at a movie theater. And it was all ages, young, middle-aged, old. It was like families going together. And it was like one of those scenes you see out of a movie when they try and show you what a movie theater experience looks like. People like running up and down the hall, on the aisles, outside in the lobby, and loud, and like people eat. I mean, it was odd. It was, and my anticipation was so huge. It was the most anticipation I've had in my life, because that buildup, when you're born to 18, 19 years old, time takes forever. And that big just desert of not getting any Star Wars live action films was so massive. And I'd been dreaming of it all my life. And then to finally get that film drop, it was an incredible thing. It felt like that 1 year waiting from the point where we got the trailer to the release. It felt like 5 years to me, you know, it felt like forever. And then when we finally got it, my reaction was I didn't know what to think about it. And I was worried what other people thought about it too, walking out. But that fight scene at the end with Maul, Qui-Gon, and Obi-Wan, I mean, yeah. that was perfect to me. I thought that hit all the marks. And the casting of Ewan McGregor, of course, and the casting of Qui-Gon Jinn with Liam Neeson, all perfect. And then, like Colin mentioned, the behind-the-scenes stuff, you find out that, yeah, that Frank Oz did puppeteer Yoda. And yeah, they tried to meld the practical with the CGI. And back then, at that point, I think when we saw what we saw, we were like, oh my God, this is so much CGI. But The Phantom Menace used the most practical effects out of any Star Wars film, I believe.
Yeah, and I think the next couple of ones, that's when they went more.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like, as soon as they got to Attack of the Clones, it was a bunch of blue screens. It was, yeah. And it's because George Lucas wanted to, when he had his eyes set on doing Star Wars, he saw things in his brain that he couldn't fully put on screen yet. So he didn't do 1, 2, and 3 until years later, because he was waiting for technology to catch up. And 1, 2, and 3 is the result of that. And I remember watching one of the behind the scenes of where they're talking about performing in front of a blue screen. And it's just like, most of the shots are mixed with some practical effects, and Doug Chain did a fantastic job. So it was just the fact that they had so much CGI going on too was just insane, and it was a lot, and it was probably a lot for the actors, because you know you have to think with people acting where the environment is something that you can't see, and they kind of have to picture it, like as they're acting, is, you know, it's tough. But fast forward to where we are now, and we have the volume, right? And that's just like genuine reactions for not just us as the audience, but the actors on screen of when they're seeing these sets for the first time. And it's incredible. It's absolutely fantastic. So it just shows you how far technology has come. And I think I saw a video of when George Lucas like actually saw it for the first time. He was like, this is what I was talking about. This is the thing that I wanted to happen. So it's crazy that we are at that stage now. And, you know, all of those sets and everything that they had in the original trilogy was just fantastic and stuff. And I think Skeleton Crew is actually going kind of back to that. And that's why the budget was so, you know, high, was because the main thing for the budget they're using is pretty much practical effects. Kathleen Kennedy said that the movie's going to have that, is going to have the Amblin Studio vibe, like E.T. and Goonies, and those movies are known for practical effects. So the fact that they're kind of going back and doing that shows you like how much they want to bring back that original trilogy feel, and what better way to do that than of where it first began. So super exciting.
Yep. Practicals. I like practicals a lot. I mean, yeah. I got to interview one of the two of the actor, well, the cast from Chucky 2. And that's one thing they talk about, that horror, that they still use majority practical, but then some of the green screen or blue screen, whatever they use, compared to back in the day where a lot of movies now have transitioned to just full digital. So I don't know. I just like half and half. Keep it half and half and I'll be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in the 90s for me, I was like, I don't like practical. Let's go all digital. Let's do CGI. CGI is so cool, because the Jurassic Park effect was had a huge impact, I think, on moviegoers and fans. And I was like, man, get rid of this practical stuff. It doesn't make any sense. But I was really into computer stuff. And now as an adult, as an older adult, I've totally flip-flopped. I'm like, I want more practical. I don't want a lot of CGI. Let's do it practical, because to me, that's really the language of Star Wars when you think about it, just to see the practical stuff. I mean, case in point, look at Colin's cosplay. I mean, it's all practical, man. It's all real. It's all in camera. I mean, that's part of the genius of Star Wars, really. I mean, George Lucas accomplished something that I think on the surface seems kind of impossible, but he made it happen, man. And it's incredible. Yeah. But I was going to say, I wonder what things, if there was anything that George Lucas wasn't able to put in the Phantom Menace that he really wanted to. If he actually had any limitations, because even still back then in 1997, 98, there was limitations still. I mean, computer graphics were still maybe like in the toddler stage. They're not where they are now, even though some people argue that computer graphics aren't as good as like a Jurassic Park, because Jurassic Park holds up big time. So I just kind of wondered that. I don't know if anyone knows that answer, but... Yeah. We do have the full art piece I wanted to show for the 25th anniversary of the Phantom Menace. Here it is right here. If you're listening on audio, it's kind of the widescreen movie poster of the 25th anniversary, with Maul in the background and Queen Amidala in the front and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. And it has pod racers on the side, as well as the Naboo starfighters and the droid starfighters there, and the landscape is on Tatooine that we got to see again in Mandalorian. So, and hopefully this artist, we're trying to contact him to have him on the podcast. Hopefully we can get him on eventually here.
Yeah.
So of course this May 4th is going to be, I think, extra special, with the fact that tickets are going to go on sale right around that time for Star Wars Celebration. And it's we all know it's going to happen in Japan. And today, before the podcast, they released what a couple of the items you can buy when you buy your tickets. I guess it's going to be May 3rd when me and Colin are going to try and buy these tickets. So,
well, so it says May 2nd, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They didn't really, yeah, because of the whole date thing is kind of confusing to me. So is it on May 2nd? Because if you look at the times and everything, okay.
Yeah. So they'll go on sale on May 2nd at 7 p.m.
Okay.
Right. But I'm not sure, is that the VIP?
Can you bring up the picture again?
Okay, VIP is May 1st. Okay, so it is May 2nd.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's Thursday. Yeah, Thursday at 7 p.m. Yep. Eastern Standard Time. So, yeah, that'll be, I guess, so Eastern, so that'd be 6 o'clock my time, and then 7 mm-hmm. o'clock Colin's time.
Yep.
Because he's in the Eastern time zone. So, yeah, they released a couple of items that you can buy, and, I mean, they're just the standard stuff. Couple of t-shirts, a lot like the t-shirt I have on right now for Chicago.
That white t-shirt though, that art for a celebration is fire. That is a beautiful, beautiful design.
The Japanese flag, the red dot with the Mount Fuji in the back with the
I might have to get both of them.
Yeah, I probably will too.
Yeah.
And then of course the patch. I'm collecting those patches. With the Japanese fan and the tote bag. I might buy all of this, to be honest with you.
See, what they need to do is make a shirt with, like, the patch as well, not just the one that has the English logo. You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure they will. Back in Chicago Celebration, it's almost like they had a surplus of their inventory of magnets. For I think maybe one of the, I think they were in Japan before, and I bought the three magnets. They're actually on my fridge right now, and they're
Hey guys, I've got a tour. There's the tour NATO warning going off. I gotta go, but I'll talk to you.
Okay.
Be safe.
Yep.
Yeah, I think my lights just flickered too. I don't think we have a tornado warning, but.
Yeah, no, that's, I love Detroit. I love the Michigan and I love, you know, the Lions, you know, my new team, but I would not live in Michigan anywhere where there's tornado warnings.
I didn't even know there are tornadoes in Michigan.
Yeah, dude. That's the reason why in those areas, a lot of people have cellars because of that reason as well.
So, yeah.
That's why Texas doesn't have very many. Like when I went out to Detroit, I got to go up to Detroit and it was weird. I had never been into a basement, you know what I mean? In a house. And it was kind of weird. It was just.
I always thought the reason why we don't have basements is because we're mostly on like limestone and it's like impossible almost. It's like too much work. I thought that was the reasoning. I think around here, that's the case. It's hard to dig through that stuff.
Well, I mean, even in California, too, they don't have basements either. It's like East Coast, West Coast. Wait, what is it? East Coast that has majority of that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff at the Celebration store, I'm sure. And if you do get the VIP access, you get to access that store earlier. And they're bound to have so many other different things. But, yeah, these are the first couple of images of the stuff that you can actually buy when you buy the tickets on May 2nd, which we're going to try. So for London, the tickets sold out in a matter of minutes. The VIP was almost instantly gone. The 4-day pass, I think, sold out in a minute or two. And that's what caused us to have to buy individual passes. That was the first time I ever had to do that because I usually just buy the entire run of the convention pass, if it's a 4-day, 5-day, 3-day. Japan's going to be a 3-day. So
hopefully. Yeah, I mean, they're dropping a lot more stuff too, not just for Japan, but I mean, Hot Toys is dropping those exclusives.
Well, I mean, there's constantly stuff going on.
For, you know, the 40th, there's a lot more to me in the last year with Hot Toys. There haven't been that much stuff of Hot Toys being dropped. Other than tied to Ahsoka and stuff, but Hot Toys is doing stuff. The Funko, I don't know. For some reason, of course, it's the 40th, but I'm seeing a lot more.
What's the 40th?
I mean, the 40th. The 25th, what is it? 25th?
25th for the Phantom
25th Menace. Anniversary. I don't know. I keep thinking 40th. I'm thinking Ghostbusters. My bad.
Yeah, the 40th was in 2017.
I'm thinking of Ghostbusters because we just did an interview with the voice actor who played Slimer, and we're talking about the 40th anniversary for the Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I get crossed over between
all the different fandoms. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot recently about that Orlando celebration, the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. A lot of different things going on. I know, especially with Jar Jar. Me and Colin, if Colin was still here, you could probably talk about it. But that's where I met Colin for the first time, in Orlando in 2017 at Star Wars Celebration. And there was the 40th celebration. There's a 40th panel, and we slept overnight in the convention center when we could before the lottery system intervened there. But there was a guy dressed up as Jar Jar Binks at the 501st bash that Colin and I went to, and I thought his costume was like soft, like made out of soft parts, but his costume was like hard plastic. It was so weird. And Colin and I were like, can we take a picture with you? And he said, yeah, sure. So he put his arm around me and he like stabbed me with like his fingers, and they were like, there's no joints in the fingers. And I was like, how is this guy like in this costume? And I looked at his elbow, and his elbow was like bent, where you see like bent plastic. I don't know what's a hard plastic thing I can compare it to.
Like carbon fiber?
No, more malleable than carbon fiber.
Yeah, because I mean, back then it wasn't like that foam they use now to make some of the costumes.
Yeah, I want to say the piece that runs under your tire on your car, but harder than that.
Dang.
And I was like, how is this guy in this costume? So, yeah, Colin just sent me a text. Let me see if he's okay here.
That was one thing I was going to ask Colin, if he actually built a cooling system inside his thing.
Oh, the air horn's going off. That's what he heard. Wow.
Yeah, in Michigan, I heard those a couple of times. They do test occasionally, too, at certain times.
We have them in Texas, too, right?
But they don't run them like they don't do random tests out in the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do.
I never hear them, so I don't know.
It's too noisy where you live, Ray. Yeah, they would like to run ours at noon on Saturdays.
Okay, yeah. No, I've never heard it over here in San Antonio.
It's kind of weird. But when we first moved here, we're like, what's going on? But hopefully Colin and his family are okay over there in Michigan. I'm pretty sure he'll make it through. He's from Michigan, so. The next thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that we've spoken about this character before, Vernestra Rowe from The Acolyte. She is a character that does appear in the High Republic novels, all the media they have, the comic books. But the special thing about her is that not only is she a Jedi, not only will we see her in live action, I think she's the only character that's transferring from High Republic books, novels, comic books, to live action. But she actually has a very interesting weapon. We've talked about it before. She actually has a lightsaber that converts into a whip. And apparently we're going to see that in live action. And this story comes from the Star Wars News Net website. The Acolyte will feature Vernestra Rowe's light whip in live action. Creator Leslie Headland seeks to honor what's come before. The article states, in the latest issue of Total Film Magazine, cast members and series creator Leslie Headland provided more details about the upcoming show, The Acolyte. Fans of the High Republic era will be happy to hear that Vernestra Rowe's iconic light whip will be making its debut in live action. Fans will also be happy to hear that Leslie Headland will be honoring much of what's come before and will pull from unexpected sources. Vernestra Rowe is a fan favorite character in the High Republic books and comics. She became one of the youngest Jedi Knights for her time. That's what she's famous for. She even has a unique lightsaber, a light whip. Rebecca Henderson, the actress, will portray the character in The Acolyte. But this version is not the same as the one seen before. Henderson explains this as a much older individual, though her light whip will still be with her. She says, I don't want to use the word badass, but Vernestra is such a badass. She's a revered Jedi Master. The series is set about 100 years on from when we've seen Vernestra in other High Republic media, so she's certainly an elder who thinks she's seen it all. Vernestra's lightsaber is purple, and she was able to alter it as a 16-year-old and turn it into a light whip. And there you can see, if you're watching us on video, that that's her in all her glory there as a Jedi Master, as a very young Jedi Master. The article continues states series creator Leslie Headland also had some information to share. She states that she looked to George Lucas and the original trilogy as inspiration for crafting the show, but she also states there are a lot of other references and nods to all parts of the Star Wars saga, including the expanded universe. She goes on to say that cinematographer Chris Teague and I talked a lot about honoring George Lucas's camera moves. I would say the original trilogy became our touch point for how to craft the world, while the episode one-ness of the show is a bit more thematic. It's a show packed with everything I wanted to explore. I wanted an EU, expanded universe stuff in there. References to the original trilogy, The Phantom Menace, the Disney sequels. It's absolutely packed, which that's something I love to hear. Because you never know, you may not get that chance again. It sounds a lot like Rian Johnson's kind of mindset, how he wanted to pack a lot of stuff in his movie. Finally, Headland also explained how The Acolyte is similar to The Mystery Story. She compares it to another of her previous works, Russian Doll, and explains how there's more that's constantly unveiled. She says it's similar to Russian Doll, which was really about giving the audience information episode by episode, the spiral of storytelling. This is a much larger landscape, but it similarly tackles the idea of your eyes can deceive you. I like that aspect. You're going to think the show is one thing, but then it's going to gear shift into something else and then do it again. I love it. With Acolyte premiering in June 4th, to be precise, fans can expect more information to come out regarding the show. Just recently, series star Amanda Stenberg also talked about how the show is similar to the prequels thematically. New images have also been released via Empire Magazine, showcasing more characters. So does that get you more excited, Ray?
Well, I mean, I'm interested. I mean, I guess why I got the book for it. So if I see characters pop up, I can look them up and get some more information on them. But then also, it kind of makes you think, like, are they going to drop us another trailer? Kind of like the Wolverine, they gave us that teaser trailer, and then they just gave us another trailer just yesterday. Do you think they're going to drop another trailer for this before?
That's a good question. I don't think they're going to drop another trailer. I don't know if anyone in chat there is any the wiser about that, but I think that's it. I mean, it would be nice if we got something on May 4th.
Yeah.
But we're already getting Tales of the Jedi. So
true.
To me, I think Lucasfilm's thinking is, yeah, we're giving them a whole series. I mean,
we are getting that trailer. We're getting it after the movie. Phantom Menace.
Well, it's like a behind the scenes type of thing. I don't think it's necessarily a trailer.
Oh, I thought it was going to be an actual
movie. No, it's going to be something akin to what we got with the IMAX showing of Rogue One. Then we got to see like a scene from Andor. I think we're going to get like a scene and a little bit of behind the scenes type stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought
I'm excited to see that. And I'll be able to see it now that I have my work schedule. We're gonna go see it at Flixer Brewhouse in San Antonio. So
nice,
that should be great. And speaking of movie theaters, so it really makes you wonder when we talk about stuff on the podcast. We think people do listen to the podcast that actually work at Lucasfilm, because I brought up the fact that I didn't like that we didn't really have access to go see the marathon on the 4th. To see all 9 films on May the 4th. I really wasn't making plans. When I heard of the marathon being announced, I looked to see what cities it was announced in, and Dallas, Texas was the closest showing for us, and that's like four and a half hours away from us. And it's about a 24-hour experience, and luckily my brother does live there, but I would have to stay at his place, be awake for 24 hours, do that whole thing. And of course, those tickets went by pretty quick because the population of Dallas is I think, the most I think Dallas is the most highly populated city in the state of Texas. That or Houston. But yeah, tickets sold out really quick. The only available tickets were like at the very, very front, which I do not like sitting at the very front of theaters to watch movies.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it when I was younger, and I wouldn't want to do it when I'm older. So yeah, so that was just out of the question. But Santikos at Casablanca in San Antonio is actually going to show it. They sound, it feels like to me that Lucasfilm listened to us, and they're going to have this marathon in more sites in America, because I think the demand was pretty high. So if you live in the San Antonio area, there's still really good seats available. I just checked. But they're going quick. The sooner we get to the marathon, the more those seats are going to disappear. It is a 24-hour experience. Feels like you're going to have to take off maybe that Friday, maybe get some good sleep in. And you'll get to see The Phantom Menace first thing in the morning. I believe it starts at 6 a.m. and does it until the next day. So, yeah, that should be an experience. But if you do purchase the drink and the popcorn, it's unlimited refills. So you don't have to pay for it after you buy it the first time there. And you get a limited edition poster, which I haven't seen anyone post what that looks like. So I'm kind of wondering about that. I'm keeping an eye out for that.
I think it's just
going to
be the same one as the one that they have in the theaters, I think.
Do they have a marathon poster in the theaters?
Well, remember when we went to see Ghostbusters, that poster that we saw there?
That was this one.
I thought it was going to be that they were going to give us.
Well, no, this is episode one. I'm talking about the marathon. There's a marathon poster that they're giving away.
Oh,
it might be this. Okay. It might be the badge. I think this is going to be a badge that they give you. When I did the episode 7 marathon, 1 to 7, and 7 was the premiere at 7 o'clock. You saw the names of all the films, excluding The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker, of course. But yeah, you'll be able to claim that you saw every single movie in the theater.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking at our comments here. Bender says, I don't think they're going to do it in Canada, which means I'll do it on my own.
That's weird. They're not doing it in Canada. That bites.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna probably do it on my own anyway. I'm gonna probably do it leading up. You know,
yeah,
I mean?
I'll probably have something Star Wars running in the background just for the simple fact that it is Star Wars Day, and it's also Free Comic Book Day as well. And there's gonna be lots of events taking place. If you live to or inside of a major city, there's gonna be events. All you have to do is look, check out your local comic book shops. I know there's some going to be some events happening where they're going to do trivia, but I'll be working at night, so I won't be able to participate. I've never been able to do Star Wars trivia in a general public setting like that. And there was one time my family and I, we went to Pluckers and they were doing a trivia thing, and it was Star Wars. They did a section of Star Wars. And I was eating my wings there, and I was just randomly saying the answers. And my wife was like, she like nudged me with her elbow not to say anything, but I couldn't help it, man. I was like, and it wasn't like the hardcore trivia stuff, because as we all know, there is really hardcore trivia out there, and it can get ridiculous. But yeah, I want to compete in that. And I know there is trivia at Dragon Con that it is absolutely ridiculous. I would not probably get a single answer correct, because they ask you things like, where was this ship manufactured? What planet, and what's the name of the organization that manufactured that ship? I'm not going to know that. That's like a West End game knowledge there, from manuals that it was only printed once and for a game that it's no longer in print. So yeah, stuff like that. It's wild. But you did bring up merch earlier. And like I said earlier in the podcast, it feels like there's something new that some company makes a deal with Lucasfilm to do the licensing. And I wear sandals around my house. I don't wear shoes. I just wear Under Armour, send, I guess, free shout out to them. But I've never really worn Crocs before. Do you wear Crocs?
Dude, it's like my hat size. They don't have my size someone like me. Yeah, I've tried going to try them on, dude. They only have like up to, I think, like large or something like that. And my feet barely fit in that thing. And I'm like, my wife goes, they're so comfortable. I'm like, well, it'd be nice to know how it is if I can find one that's my size. But yeah,
so yeah.
Never tried them on.
Crocs became a phenomenon in the U.S. like 10 years ago. There's like Crocs stores now that you can go to.
Yeah.
And they're all about like putting like the little like decorations, the, what are they called, Ray?
Croc charms, I think.
Yeah, charms. So now they release some Crocs that are a little enticing to me. if you're watching us on video there, there's some black ones that where you could put the Millennium Falcon, a TIE Fighter, a Y-Wing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I've tried on Crocs before. They didn't feel that comfortable to me. They felt like any other standard shoe. But if you've seen another Disney property, a newly acquired Disney property in Deadpool, he talks about them being so comfortable and he wears them. That's what gave me the onus to try and find some and put them on if they're that comfortable, but they didn't feel that comfortable to me. But anyways, here's another picture of some red Croc sandals. This is kind of what I wear around the house, and you can still slap the charms in. I might get
these. That I probably would wear.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like what Bender said. I use them when I take the trash out. That's funny.
So yeah, going back to a story that we mentioned as one of our main topics previously. I went to our local Best Buy, and our local Best Buy it's all the way like a town away from where I live, but I call it my local Best Buy. And I actually bought some Star Wars cards there and pulled a really rare Mando car. But anyways, back to that topic, physical media is kind of dying out, and Best Buy has officially stopped selling physical media. And just recently the news came down that Target will no longer sell physical media starting next year. So
it makes no sense.
Why does it not make any sense?
Well, I mean, why, like, for example, there's people posting online, like, if you want to watch this certain movie, you can't watch it because it's not on any of the streaming services or whatever. So the only way you can watch it is if you have a physical copy, which to me, it kind of defers the purpose where you want, you know, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I stopped buying because at one point I was buying from Apple, like buying the downloads, right? But from when I started seeing the news about, like, if you bought a movie on PlayStation, even though you paid for it to own it, after January of this year, they were basically, it was getting pulled. Even though you paid that $20 or whatever you paid to own it, they deleted it off your cloud or whatever you had it on. So to me, I'm like, I don't know. It's making me want to go back to physical media.
Yeah, I think these trends are cyclical. I think it'll come back eventually, just depending on how this era of streaming kind of evolves or devolves in a way. But the thought I just kind of had is, if this all like happens with every major retailer where they just stop selling physical media, is that maybe going to give rise to something like a Blockbuster to come back and we go rent movies again? If these streamers, these studios, corporations want to keep movies from being streamed, I mean, that would be the only way to go and actually see them. And with the rise of the cost of these streaming channels like Netflix, I canceled Netflix for a while because my family and I just didn't really see the point because it was getting pretty expensive. So we stopped having Netflix for a while, and we were good, because it seems like there's a de-evolution of these streaming services becoming cable slower and slower. And you have to go to all kinds of different streaming services to get something unique, and it's that bill is turning into what we all paid for cable some 5, 10, 15 years ago for some. And kind of defeats the purpose of cutting the cord in a way. But now it seems like this day and age, you kind of need streaming to see certain things if you want to see it, unless you are like a advocate of buying physical media and you're just buying. And the thing that really shocked me, I worked at Hastings. Hastings was like a movie, music bookstore. And every Tuesday is when they would drop the new releases of movies. And I would see the same people come in every day. And no matter what it was, they would buy the new movie. And I was like, wow, these I didn't think these people existed. But yeah, we had regular customers come in every Tuesday, buy all the new movies that came out. And they were expensive, man. I mean, they were buying DVDs at that point in time. It was early 2000s. And yeah, I mean, spending $24, $32 on a brand new movie every Tuesday, it was kind of interesting. And I kind of wonder where those people are now. Well, I always wondered what their DVD collections looked like, because they would buy a lot of movies, man. And working at Hastings, I wasn't making a lot of money. I was essentially a newlywed at the time. And the discount, I think, was like 30% or something. It made me want to buy movies, but I guess I was a little bit responsible there, and I didn't go crazy. But yeah, there is a big, it's almost like a subculture of people that buy physical media, because I don't know anyone that goes out and on the regular goes and buys physical media. Maybe my buddy in North Austin, Carl, dude, does that.
People are going back to physical media, not just from, you know, VHS and vinyl. I mean, people are going back hardcore to physical media, like VHS, for example, and vinyl. People are looking for those items now. And even because I work like at Real Retro, and Real Retro has vinyl and, you know, VHSs. And like one of the ones that's hard, if you look it up, Dogma from Kevin Smith, that thing's a ridiculous price because it's no longer in print and you can't get it. Certain items are like that where they're not in print anymore, or, you know, unless you find it like a garage sale or a retro store or something like that, you can't find those items. And it's kind of scary because now, of course, you've got your Blu-ray, your 4K. It's kind of one of those things. It's like, okay, because now they're selling 8K TVs now. So,
yeah, they started selling 8K a couple of years back, but they're just extremely expensive.
Yeah.
And I know movies have been shot in like 12 and 16K.
Yeah. It's interesting, dude. It's so crazy. We're in some crazy times right now. Vinyls, like I said, people were getting rid of that left and right. So whoever picked them up and stuff like that, some of the stuff like first print, I didn't realize it was like books, like even hardcover books, first printing, second printing, those things are actually still collected by people. If you find a first printing of like the Harry Potter book or whatever, it's in a couple of $100s if you have a first printing hardcover, you know what I mean? So it's just people have their, I say vice, you know what I mean, what they collect or what they do. But no, I see it's going to come back. It's going to be a temporary thing like you mentioned, but it's going to come back. People are going to want that physical media back.
Yeah, it is. I think all these trends and the nostalgia factor, the fact that records have come back. But to me, the head scratcher is VHS. Because VHS doesn't look good, man. I mean,
but it's nostalgia, man.
Yeah, it is nostalgia. I mean, you get to hold the thing in your hand and it brings back memories of your childhood and all that. But the picture's just so horrible.
Yeah.
You can hook up, I think you can hook up a VHS player with audio video cables, right, to your TV?
I'm not too sure. I've never checked my flat screen to see if it has that feature.
Because when I had VHS, I had a CRT TV, which is like 480i resolution, and it doesn't look good. And that's how I experienced Star Wars for the first time. And then when I saw it on the big screen, I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. That's what made the theatrical experience so great. And back then, when they released VHS and Betamax, the industry was like, this is going to ruin movie theaters. No one's going to want to go see movies. But I think the opposite happened, that made people want to go to the movies more. And we're kind of in that same kind of pocket, that pattern of the industry saying, we need to stop doing this so that people can go back to the theaters. But I mean, the whole pandemic situation is what threw a corkscrew and all that. But it seems like the theaters are coming back, man.
Yeah,
I know when we go do our screenings for Camp Density Geekcast, there's people there. I mean, it's stuff is making money that's out there that's even outside of the realm of like the big blockbusters, the Marvel movies. So yeah, that appetite is still there.
Yeah, I'm gonna show you something. You're gonna laugh. So I don't even have a VCR anymore, and I was at one of these shows, and I picked up these two VHSs just because of nostalgia, because these were movies that this is how I watched them, because before they went to DVD back in the day, this is what they released at back in the day. But I just bought them because I was like, man, I had this when I was younger. You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, they weren't that pricey, but it was just, this was at a convention a while back. And that's another reason why you want to go to some of these conventions, because you can find that nostalgia toys. You can find, I mean, that last time we were at RetroCon, I found that R2-D2 cake pan. You know what I mean? You don't know what you're going to find at these conventions, at toy collecting conventions. And it's kind of like you're living your childhood again when you're at things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And speaking of conventions, we are planning on going to a Star Wars convention that's been happening actually for a little while now. It is called, I'll bring it up here on the screen so everyone can see it that's watching us. It's called Rebel Scum Con, and it's going to be happening in Allen, Texas. And if you're looking on a video here, you can see all the guests are going to have. It's a pretty big variety of people that they're going to have. Yeah. Amy Allen, Barry Lowen from The Mandalorian, Brendan Wayne. I haven't met him. I haven't seen him at a convention yet, and I know he does a lot. We met Kerry Jones at Corpus Christi Con. Chris Bartlett, who's been on the podcast, he's an awesome person to talk to. And if you have the opportunity to get Chris Bartlett's autograph photo op, do it. He's a really, really cool dude. I know Christine was, I think she did a convention in the Gulf there. Yeah, there's a lot of people showing up. Dickie Beer, he's been to a few. Evan Witten, that's someone that I think I want to try and secure an interview with when we go. And it would be awesome to get his thoughts and pick his brain on what the whole process of being Jason Syndulla in Ahsoka was all about.
Yeah.
And yeah, Lateef Crowder as well. I haven't seen him at a convention yet. It'd be awesome to talk to him. So yeah, we're gonna try and secure some of these people and do some interviews and release them on the podcast. Misty Rosas as well. She played Quill in the first season of The Mandalorian. Yeah. And she was awesome. And she was also the Frog Lady in season two of The Mandalorian. And I've been trying to get her on the podcast. So yeah, it should be a really good time.
Yeah,
and we plan on going to a few of those dates, so look out for that. And that's going to be at the end of June, I believe, June 27th through the 30th.
Yeah,
so we should. I'm thinking we're going to get a few interviews at the convention. So,
and then they put the hotels up too. If you get the hotels, it's $139 per night if you're able to get it, because it's actually in the hotel convention area.
Yeah, the cool thing is, yeah, if you go to the convention, you can stay at the hotel that's connected to the convention area. Yeah. So you don't have to drive anywhere. It's kind of a one-stop shop type thing.
Yeah.
And I've heard some interesting stories about those types of conventions where sometimes vendors will have like stuff like in their room that they're selling. I think General Kenobi told me about that, like at IICC, where it bleeds into people's rooms and like selling stuff that is pretty rare. But we should probably have him on the podcast to talk about that. But
true.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
Pretty much. Let me double check if we had anything else that we were going to talk about.
One of the organizers for Rebel Scum Con, he wants to come on the podcast. We might do a podcast Friday where we talk to him, where he can kind of break down to our audience what Rebel Scum Con is. If you go to their website, it is rebelscumconventions.com, and it's plural, rebelscumconventions.com. You can kind of read about their history, and it's a pretty good website. And was there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
May the 4th, I think we bought it up. Well, did we bring it up last time we did a podcast? Yeah, I think we did, about the guests that are going to be at the May the 4th event at Wonderland Mall. I think we did.
Yes, we talked about that. Yeah, the voice of Max Rebo. It's right here for watching us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Simon Williamson, who I know Colin's going to want something from. David Ankrum, who was the voice actor for Wedge Antilles. And, of course, Chris Parsons, who was Forlom, along with other droids there, the Death Star droid and a snowtrooper. So that is happening May 4th and May 5th. And, hopefully we do get an interview with Simon Williamson for sure.
Yeah, that'd be definitely cool. At least get
to talk to him. So that would be fantastic.
Yeah, and then don't forget, go to your local comic book shops on May 4th. If you're not in the theaters, support your comic book shops. Dragon's Lair is going to have, we're going to have a stormtrooper there. We're going to have some cosplayers, one comic book artist from San Antonio who turned the Lexington battleship into a transformer and made a little comic about it, which is pretty cool. So he's going to be there at that convention, at that event right there. It's going to be fun. Free comic book day is always fun for the kids. You get a free books. You get to pick. There's going to be like a Star Wars. There's some Marvel ones. So if you like comics and you want to take your kids, take them. Get free comics, man.
Yeah, shout out to Dragon's Lair for providing us with Star Wars comics to review for the podcast. Yeah. I know there's going to be a podcast we do here pretty soon where we review a book that's not quite out yet. But hopefully we get that out to you soon. So,
yeah. Until my computer crashed. We had just sat down with the artists, basically with the upcoming one shot. So hopefully we can get that back. We'll see.
All right. Yeah. And I think that's pretty much it for Retro Ray. My name is David, and may the force be with you.
Always.